Welcome to Mayo Clinic Pharmacy Grand Rounds, a weekly podcast for pharmacists, physicians, physician assistants, and nurse practitioners who are interested in learning more about clinical pharmacology topics. I'm your host, Garrett Schramm, Director of Pharmacy Education and Academic Affairs at Mayo Clinic. To claim pharmacology CE credit or to get a copy of presentation slides, visit ce.mayo.edu/pharmacypodcast. Penicillins are the most widely reported drug allergy by patients. Unfortunately, mislabeled antibiotic allergies have been shown to be associated with negative consequences, such as increased antimicrobial resistance, increased length of stay, and higher treatment costs. When appropriate, actively delabeling penicillin allergies is an impactful intervention that all providers can do to benefit patients. Dr. Nicholas Vollmer, a pharmacist at Mayo Clinic, reviews the consequences of mislabeled penicillin allergies and outlines strategies to combat this common reporting error.
Penicillin allergies are widely overreported by the general population and confer significant clinical and financial impacts, from increased use of broad-spectrum antimicrobials to significant financial impacts to the patient, hospital, and healthcare system. A recent study published in 2019 in the New England Journal of Medicine identified that delabeling penicillin allergic patients saved per patient per year about $2,000. As healthcare professionals, we all play an integral role in allergy stewardship and ensuring the best outcomes for our patients. Today, I'm going to be describing some of the background of penicillin allergies, including the incidence and prevalence here in the U.S. I'm going to discuss some of the consequences, specifically the clinical and financial impacts associated with mislabeled penicillin allergies. And then I'm going to talk about some strategies that institutions and persons can utilize to combat these mislabeled allergies. Before we jump into the presentation, let's meet our patient. We have a 56-year-old female who's admitted for a right hip fracture after falling on ice, unfortunately a common occurrence here in Minnesota. Her past medical history includes osteopenia and hypertension. Her allergies listed on her chart are penicillin and sulfa, to which she has a rash, but it's nonspecific. And her current medications include hydrochlorothiazide, a calcium supplement, as well as polyethylene glycol as needed for constipation. Now, it's important we remember this patient as she's a very common presentation of a patient who might have a penicillin allergy. It's usually nondescript and not very specific, and it just sticks to their chart for a long time. Now, it's important to remember because she represents one of many patients here in the U.S. Of the U.S. population, 10 to 20% of patients report an allergy to penicillin. It's by far the most common reported allergy to a medication. Specifically, of those with reported penicillin allergies, more than 95% have actually been found to be able to tolerate the drug itself. Furthermore, less than 1% have been shown to have a clinically significant hypersensitivity reaction to penicillin itself as well. This just goes to show that the majority of patients are definitely over-reporting penicillin allergies, and most of these patients actually can tolerate the drug itself. And I think that's likely secondary to that they are experiencing adverse drug reaction, but what type of adverse drug reaction? When I think of adverse drug reactions, I usually split into two types. There's type A, which is predictable, and this represents about 85 to 90% of adverse drug reactions. These are typically reactions that, given sufficient exposure, dose, and duration, it's an expected result. So I think of diarrhea with antibiotics or nephrotoxicity with aminoglycosides specifically. This is in contrast to type B, which is unpredictable, or hypersensitivity reactions. These represent about 10 to 15% of our reactions, and they're usually mediated via immunological mechanisms or inflammatory mechanisms. Furthermore, these are split into three different categories. First, on timing, is it immediate or delayed reaction? What's the mode? Is it a drug allergy or a PI reaction? Or is it a pseudoallergy? And lastly, the actual mechanism at play. Per the Jell-Clum's classification, they can have either a type 1 through 4 mediated mechanism for their allergy. And I think it's important to note that people who report penicillin allergy most frequently report type 1 and type 4 penicillin allergies. And what does that mean? Well, our type 1 is going to be our scarier IgE-mediated allergies. These are typically immediate, take minutes to hours to occur, and can manifest as anaphylaxis, angioedema, hives, urticaria, bronchospasm. This is in contrast to our types 2 through 4, which are delayed reactions, taking anywhere from days to weeks, but are often variable in response. The most common being in penicillin allergic patients, a type 4 T-cell mediated allergic reaction, where they specifically usually present with a delayed maculopapular rash that's usually benign. Now, this is important to note because the majority of penicillin allergic patients actually report a rash as their primary reaction. This was identified further in a study by Blumenthal and colleagues out of 2018. In Blumenthal's study, which we'll talk about more later in the presentation, they identified the percent of patients reporting penicillin allergy and what was the reported reaction to penicillin, with the most common being rash at 37.5%, followed by unknown at 25.5%, followed by hives, angioedema, GI upset, anaphylaxis, and itching. Now, a couple of important things to note about this study specifically. These are patients' reported reactions to penicillin, not necessarily what actually occurred at that time. And the majority, between rash and unknown, are not those scarier IgE-mediated. That said, the hives, angioedema, and anaphylaxis definitely have a high amount of patients reporting that. But interestingly enough, this study didn't look at when those patients had reported that reaction to occur. And that's important because 80% of IgE-mediated penicillin allergies actually disappear after 10 years. In addition to that, most patients with reported allergies never actually had an IgE-mediated allergy to begin with. Studies have shown that patients often overreport that they had an anaphylaxis or a severe hives type of rash, but it wasn't truly that severe in nature, and it might have been an underlying syndrome going on at the same time. And this leads me into my first question, which you can reply at polleverywhere.com/MayoRx or text MayoRx to 22333. What percentage of patients with reported penicillin allergies are able to tolerate penicillins? Is it A, 35, B, 50, C, 75, or D, 95%? So I agree with the majority of responses here. As we recall, 95% or more patients actually tolerate a penicillin despite having a reported penicillin allergy. And that's about 10 to 20% of the U.S. population. In addition, as I mentioned, less than 1% have a clinically significant hypersensitivity reaction that we must be concerned about. So let's jump back to our patient. As we last left her, she had a right hip fracture, unfortunately. They do further imaging, which shows a femoral neck fracture, and so orthopedic surgery is consulted to come and help. And they want to complete a screw fixation in the OR. Now, they remember she has that penicillin rash allergy as well as a sulfa rash allergy. So as an alternative agent for their surgical site infection prophylaxis, they decide to use clindamycin. In the following days, she subsequently accidentally develops C. diff infection as a surgical site infection, unfortunately complicating her care. Now, these just go to show and highlight some of the clinical impacts from using that alternative agent due to her reported penicillin allergy. And multiple studies have showed that there's significant clinical impacts associated with a reported penicillin allergy. So what are those clinical impacts that we see? Well, first, these patients usually receive more broad-spectrum antibiotics. In addition, they have more healthcare-associated infections and resistance rates. They have longer lengths of stay and increased hospital readmissions. So let's break down each of these clinical impacts into a little more detail. So for a lot of different infectious syndromes, penicillins or beta-lactams are one of our drugs of choice. Unfortunately, depending on the penicillin allergy and the reported reaction to penicillin, we often have to use additional or other agents. If a patient might report with anaphylaxis, and then the clinician might be a little bit more concerned to use a beta-lactam due to that reaction and concern for cross-reactivity. So in its place, we no longer can use penicillin, and we have to use alternative agents. Alternative agents that are frequently used in its place are vancomycin, clindamycin, gentamicin, carbapenems, and fluoroquinolones, which has been shown in numerous studies. But as we know, these antibiotics all carry their own risks. Increased risks of broad-spectrum use can lead to more resistance, development of multi-drug-resistant organisms, increased adverse drug events, and such. Also, they're potentially less efficacious. Sometimes our penicillin or beta-lactam is our drug of choice for the infectious syndrome we're wanting to treat, and we're having to use these alternatives that might not do as good of a job. A great example I think of is surgical site infections. Cefazolin is one of the best drugs to use for surgical site infections depending on the procedure type because it covers our usual suspects really well. But unfortunately, if they have a penicillin allergy, that might be avoided and they have to use one of these alternative agents. That study we had talked about regarding Blumenthal in 2018 actually wanted to look at what is the impact of a reported penicillin allergy on the development of surgical site infections in patients undergoing procedures. They conducted a single center retrospective cohort study at Mass Gen Hospital with just under 8,400 patients undergoing over 9,000 procedures from 2010 through 2014. Of note, the most common procedures were hip and knee arthroplasty specifically. In the retrospective of the review, they identified that 11% of those patients had reported a penicillin allergy. This is in contrast to 89% reporting no penicillin allergy. A couple important things to note. They included all patients, whether it was clinician-reported or patient-reported, for that penicillin allergy, as well as all types of reaction, whether it was unknown, IgE-mediated, rash, anything, included them in the penicillin allergy arm. What they found in terms of their primary outcome was the incidence of surgical site infection was numerically increased in the penicillin allergy arm, in contrast to the no penicillin allergy, by about 0.9%. In the univariable analysis, it was not a statistically significant increase. More interestingly, what alternative agents did they use? Well, in the penicillin allergy arm, only 12.2% of patients received cefazolin, compared to 92.4% in the no penicillin allergy arm. So alternative agents they went to included Clinda, Vanco, Gent, fluoroquinolones. But what was more interesting is when they did an adjusted odds ratio, looking at adjusting for age, sex, race, procedure type, duration, wound classification, they did find a significantly increased risk by about 51% for developing a surgical site infection in the penicillin allergy arm. So it starts to hint at the first risks of developing a healthcare-associated infection of concern in our reported penicillin allergic group. But what about our bigger and scarier infections and resistance, such as MRSA, C. diff infections, and VRE? Two large population health-based studies, one by Macy and Contreras from 2010 to 2012 in Southern California at a Kaiser Foundation hospital system there, looked at 51,000 unique penicillin allergic patients matched to control patients. And they were matched based on age, sex, and date of admission. The Blumenthal study, which was a separate 2018 Blumenthal study from the previous one, looked at just over 64,000 penicillin allergic patients compared to just under 240,000 non-penicillin allergic patients from 1995 to 2015 in the United Kingdom. What they found was statistically significantly increased risks of developing MRSA by 14 and 69%, increased risk of C. difficile infection by 23 and 26%, and increased risk in the Macy and Contreras study for VRE by 30%, and it wasn't studied in the Blumenthal study. So it just goes to show that a reported penicillin allergy is not a benign allergy, and it can cause significant healthcare-associated infections and resistance that are concerning. But furthermore, what about readmission and length of stay? A study by Van Dischke et al. Out of the Netherlands looked at about 1,000 penicillin allergic patients compared to just under 17,000 non-penicillin allergic patients. They evaluated your risk of readmission after 12 weeks or 3 months. They found that the group that had the reported penicillin allergy had a significantly higher risk to get readmitted just based on the reported penicillin allergy. Furthermore, the study by Macy and Contreras looked at your average length of hospital stay for a median follow-up of 20.5 months. They found that those in the reported penicillin allergy arm had a significantly increased more total hospital days by about 0.59 days, which was 9.9% of their total. And that just goes to show that those longer hospital days, we know that a hospital is a dangerous place to be sometimes for patients, and they can contract significantly more infections as well as significantly more financial impacts and costs just by staying 0.59 days. And you might not think, oh, only 0.59 days is not a significant amount. However, when you spread that out over 10 to 20% of the U.S. population, it adds up to a lot of total hospital days. However, if that's not enough to convince you that there's significant financial impacts, a study by Mattingly and colleagues did a systematic review of 30 articles looking at the associated costs of a reported penicillin allergy versus not. What they found was that the increased associated cost with inpatient direct drug costs was about $0 to $609 per patient. Total inpatient costs increased from $1,145 to $4,254 per patient. And their outpatient prescription costs increased by $14 to $193. So all significant cost increase in the reported penicillin allergy arm. What were the most common costs associated with that penicillin allergy? Well, the choice of agent they had to use as an alternative due to the penicillin allergy, your risk of readmission, your number of antibiotics used during that admission. Did they have to use IV antibiotics because they didn't have a good PO option? ICU admission risk. And then outpatient antibiotic use as well. So let's circle back to our patient. She unfortunately developed, when we last left her, that surgical site infection as well as C. diff infection. But given these new ailments, she'll have significantly increased financial costs associated with her healthcare stay. A study by Schweizer and colleagues estimated the average surgical site infection cost about $12,000. Study by Zhang and colleagues found that the average C. diff infection costs about $21,000. We know from our Mattingly study that her total inpatient directed drug cost is going to increase by about $2,700, and her outpatient drug cost is going to increase by about $100. She'll have likely an increased length of stay per our Macy and Contreras study, which could be variable depending on the institution you evaluated at. This leads her to a grand total of potentially $36,000 more for her hospital stay. Now, this is likely an overrepresentation given the fact that some of these different infections might have overlapping costs included in them, but it just goes to show that this patient is going to have a significantly increased cost of stay due to these financial impacts, likely from her reported penicillin allergy requiring her to get clindamycin. While that's important as well, just remember what the patient now has to go through as well. She subsequently, unfortunately, developed that surgical site infection as well as C. diff, and she has to live through that too, which can be very traumatizing for our patients as well. So that leads me to what could we have done differently with her reported penicillin allergy? How could we have better managed her reported penicillin allergy when she came into the hospital? This is an open-ended question, and so I encourage a lot of response and engagement, and then I'll share my perspective on it as well. Awesome. So I think we have a lot of great responses here and a lot of great ideas. Just to pull out a couple that I'm seeing here is an allergy history interview or talking to the patient about her allergy to get a better idea of what it was. As we remember, it was just a rash as a child. Another thing I'm seeing is conduct a penicillin skin test, a great modality for truly testing is a patient allergic or an amoxicillin oral challenge. Desensitization is always another great option as well, depending on how their allergy is presenting. So all great answers. And I wanted to give a little bit of my perspective on how we could have done appropriate strategies to delabel our patient and all patients. So first that we noted a lot in that last question was allergy history interview. Such an easy intervention that requires just a little bit of time on the healthcare professional side to go in and actually talk to the patient and get more details related to the allergy history. Skin testing was also mentioned on the last slide, as well as oral and graded challenges. Great modalities for truly testing is a patient penicillin allergic. An allergy consult or referral. We can always involve our allergist colleagues to help evaluate the patient as well. And then lastly, education, both to the patient and the provider, can be an important step in this strategy for delabeling. So let's talk in a little bit more detail about each of these strategies. So as we said, the allergy history interview, I consider to be one of the most important parts of the penicillin allergy stewardship. And so important because studies have shown up to 80% of penicillin allergies can be delabeled just by going and talking to the patient and getting more information and details. A study by Sagona and colleagues looked at the impact of pharmacist-led interviews on allergy history interviews. They identified 32 patients, and out of those 32, based on the allergy history interview alone, they could convert 75% from a non-penicillin to a beta-lactam, as that they did not have a true penicillin allergy. They went to their provider colleagues, and 21 out of the 24 recommendations were accepted, equaling 87.5% acceptance rate, to switch them from a non-penicillin to a beta-lactam. So overall, 65% of those patients, just based on the allergy history interview, went from a non-penicillin to a beta-lactam, all at the expense of a little bit of the pharmacist's time. But what are some important interview components when we're going to talk to our patients about their penicillin allergy? Well, first, I think it's such a great opportunity to empower the patient and let them tell you about their allergy and what happened when they experienced it. Some important components you want to remember as well are the characterization of the reaction. Have the patient explain what happened when they took that medication or the penicillin. What were their signs and symptoms? What was the likelihood of causality? Did they take the penicillin and shortly after they develop a reaction? And did it go away once they stopped? Have they had that reaction in the absence of a penicillin? Was it IgE versus non-IgE? And what was the time frame? Was it immediate or delayed reaction? Did they develop hives or anaphylaxis? Or was it that maculopapular rash? Receipt of other antibiotics. Did they receive other antibiotics at the same time? Could the allergy reaction be an infectious syndrome causing it? And then lastly, history of allergy testing. Have they done penicillin skin testing? Have they had an oral graded challenge? Have they been evaluated by an allergist in their past? At the end, though, it's so important to always speak with the patient first. So often you can just go into the patient room and you get that opportunity to talk with them and they say, oh, they had nausea or diarrhea, which we know is likely a type A predictable reaction. And you can take that opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with your patient about the difference between an intolerance and an allergy and why it's important that we delabel. But let's say after the allergy history interview, you're still not sure and you want to do further testing. One of the most common modalities for testing is skin testing or penicillin skin testing. How this works is it's two sets of basically pricks. The first prick is going to be a superficial skin prick, where they'll use a major and minor determinants of penicillin right under the skin, in addition to a negative control of normal saline and a positive control of histamine. If that's negative, they'll conduct the intradermal test, which is the same process, but just at a deeper level. Studies have shown that the negative predictive value of a skin testing is greater than 95%, and that patients that report that have a negative skin test have the same likelihood of developing an allergic reaction to penicillin as the general population. If you're still not convinced after that, you can always go to a graded or oral challenge as well. Studies have shown doing this in addition to the skin testing brings a negative predictive value of greater than 99% with that skin test. What is a graded and oral challenge? Well, an oral challenge is typically about 10% of that antimicrobial dose given, and then an hour later, after you've evaluated them in a controlled setting for no allergy or allergic reaction, you give them the rest of their dose if there's no response. Whereas a graded challenge might be like you're giving the IV antibiotic, you start with 1% of the dose, then you give them 9% of the dose, and then you give them the remainder 90% in a controlled environment. An important thing to note with a graded and oral challenge, it should only be conducted in patients that you're pretty sure that don't have an IgE-mediated allergic reaction. It would be negligent and dangerous to do so in a patient that you had anaphylaxis at their last admission with the penicillin. So let's talk a little bit more about the benefits of skin testing specifically. Well, first, the IDSA-SHEA guidelines promote that penicillin skin testing should be done if you have available resources in collaboration with your allergists. But if the guidelines aren't enough to convince you of skin testing, a recent study by Nataraja and colleagues looked at a retrospective review of all inpatient penicillin skin testing. They found out of the 101 patients they skin tested, 92 were negative, 5 were positive, and 4 were indeterminate. But by doing that skin testing, they reduced the alternative antimicrobial use of vancomycin and fluoroquinolone specifically by about 96% just by doing that simple skin testing. Furthermore, that same study by Mason Contreras looked at and evaluated the return on investment by doing a penicillin skin test. They actually calculated out how much it would cost to pay a nurse to do skin tests all day for a year based on their salary and benefits involved, as well as incorporating the cost of the skin test too. And they found it confers about a 9.5 to 1 return on investment by doing skin testing through cost avoidance and reduced average length of hospital stay. One thing to note is that penicillin skin testing should not be performed in those who have a history of severe delayed reactions. This is only beneficial in IgE-mediated reactions because it will immediately respond to the skin test itself. If they have a severe delayed reaction, they might not be positive per the skin test, and then they'll go on to receive the antibiotic and unfortunately subsequently develop that severe delayed reaction. Let's briefly talk about our other modality of graded or oral challenges. A study by King and colleagues looked at a retrospective analysis of inpatients with beta-lactam allergy who had both the skin test and the subsequent oral challenge. They found that 3/4 of patients were able to switch from a non-penicillin to a beta-lactam due to that penicillin skin test and oral challenge. For each of those patients, factoring in the cost of the test itself, they saved upwards of $300 per patient switched just based on the direct drug costs. What I found to be more interesting was the fact that they followed these patients post-intervention for a year, and they evaluated if a patient got readmitted within the following year and they required antibiotics, how many of those patients that were negative on their test received a beta-lactam antibiotic. They found that 71% of that subsequent admission received a beta-lactam antibiotic, likely as a result of the negative testing at the previous admission. So what does this tell me? It shows me that while we're trying to delabel the patient in this hospital initial evaluation, there's benefits down the line by doing that skin test and oral challenge right now because we can use subsequent beta-lactams in the future as well. And then second, another study by Blumenthal and colleagues from 2015 evaluated the use of a clinical guideline to assist providers in managing penicillin allergic patients. At their institution, they felt that they didn't have the resources to do widespread penicillin skin testing, so they did graded and oral challenges, only in those patients at low likelihood for IgE-mediated reactions. They found by using this guideline that there was no difference in adverse drug events between the oral and graded challenge versus those who did not receive it. They also significantly reduced the alternative antibiotic usage in their patient population, once again showing the benefits of a graded or oral challenge or skin testing in general. And then lastly, and another super important intervention is education, both to our providers and patients. Once again, it's very cheap and costs only your time to educate. A study out of Mayo Clinic in Florida in 2018 by Sacco and colleagues evaluated the impact of an intervention in the setting of a lecture to providers on appropriate management of penicillin allergic patients. They looked at a 30-day pre-intervention period as well as a 60-day post-intervention period and assessed the change in antimicrobial prescribing post-intervention after this education lecture series. They found that penicillin cephalosporin usage went up 256 and 121.2%, and alternative antimicrobial usage such as vanco, fluoroquinolones, aztreonam, and carbapenems decreased significantly, just showing a simple education to healthcare practitioners can impact how we manage these patients. But more importantly, our education to our patients. A very interesting study by Rimawa and colleagues looked at patients who had a negative penicillin skin test. What was their result of that penicillin skin test? And they found that within 1 year, 36% of patients had redocumented that penicillin allergy on the chart, even though they had a negative penicillin skin test. Furthermore, when they surveyed patients and interviewed them, 41% reported that they would continue to avoid all penicillins despite that negative penicillin skin test. So what does this tell me? It tells me that these patients probably weren't educated and talked with about their penicillin skin test and what the impact of that is. And it's so important that we talk with our patients about the results and why it's not a true allergy so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time they're admitted. In addition, proper documentation is very important as well, as if these patients had proper documentation on their chart, it would have been recognized that they likely were not allergic to penicillins and they won't subsequently get it. But what after all of that, the patient has a true penicillin allergy? So I'd consider this in patients that had that positive penicillin skin test or a greater oral challenge, or they have a past reaction with IgE without IgE features that we can't skin test, and it sounds real to us. Well, I think this warrants a discussion about cross-reactivity between penicillin and cephalosporin specifically. I've seen a lot of healthcare providers, and depending on the penicillin allergy, try to avoid beta-lactams as a whole class just due to penicillin allergy specifically. This is likely an artifact from early research indicating that the risk between cross-reactivity was about 10%. And interestingly enough, up until about 1998, the risk of cephalosporin reaction was reported somewhere between 5.1 and 12.5%. And this is likely due to multiple reasons of why it was overreported. A lot of these studies had poor methodology and didn't actually evaluate what the reaction to the cephalosporin was. How severe was it? Was it truly anaphylaxis or was it a GI intolerance? In addition to that, it was speculated that up until about 1980, a lot of cephalosporin antibiotics had trace amounts of penicillin in them. And so patients may have actually been reacting to the penicillin. And as our antibiotics have gotten more pure, that is less likely to occur. More recently, the risk in reported penicillin allergic patients is less than 1%. Furthermore, risk of reaction in penicillin skin test positive patients is about 2.5%. It's been seen as high as about 5 or 6%. But if you're still concerned, we can further mitigate the risk by understanding basics R side chains and avoiding cross-reactive cephalosporins to penicillins. When we look at the chemical structure of penicillin and cephalosporin, they're very similar, and then we have these R1 and R2 side chains potentially that change depending on which antibiotic you use. Avoiding similar R1 side chains is very important in a penicillin allergic patient that has a true allergy to avoid this subsequent cephalosporin that has also a similar R1 side chain, to avoid the risk of cross-reactivity between the two. So it's important to understand some of the antibiotics that share a similar R1 side chain to avoid this. First, amoxicillin shares a similar R1 side chain to cefadroxil and cefprazil. And ampicillin shares a similar R1 side chain to cefalexin and cefaclor. So these antibiotics should be essentially avoided if there's a true amoxicillin or ampicillin allergy. One thing you'll note is that there's no third generation or higher cephalosporins. These cephalosporins have been shown to not likely be cross-reactive. Also, another thing to further mention is just because a patient might have a penicillin allergy and you use a non-cross-reactive cephalosporin, they could also still react to the cephalosporin, but this will mitigate our risk significantly. This leads me to my third and final question is, which of the following would you avoid for safety concerns in an amoxicillin allergic patient who developed hives being treated for cystitis? Would you avoid sulfamethoxazole trimethoprim, cefadroxil, nitrofurantoin, or ceftonir? So I agree with the majority of answers here that I would also avoid cefadroxil. As we note on the last slide, similar to R1 side chain to amoxicillin is cefadroxil and cefprazil. Sulfamethoxazole trimethoprim and nitrofurantoin shouldn't have any risk of cross-reactivity. Ceftonir is a third-generation cephalosporin that should have a lower risk of cross-reactivity, should be of less concern. But let's say we have to use a penicillin in a truly penicillin allergic patient. A great example of this would be the treatment of syphilis with penicillin G. As we know, penicillin is the drug of choice. In general, desensitization should only be completed in the hospital. It usually takes about 4 to 12 hours. Once it's complete, you have to maintain that penicillin continuously, otherwise they can resensitize and have an allergic reaction. And it has to be repeated for every course of penicillin. If you do it while they're in this hospital admission and they get discharged for a week and come back, you have to redo the desensitization process. It's not like a lifelong, you're now desensitized type thing. But I want to switch gears and talk about how I approach the reported penicillin allergic patient. So if I see that on one of my patients, I usually put them into one of three buckets, with the first being no allergy likely, the second being a reaction without IgE features, unknown reaction, or greater than 10 years ago, and the third being our most concerning, a reaction with IgE features or a delayed severe reaction. So for patients with no allergy, I typically think of these patients as those type A predictable adverse drug events. Those are going to be things like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, that you might expect to see, and those aren't true allergies. Second, a family history. There's no hereditary component with the penicillin allergy, so if your parent or sibling has a penicillin allergy, that doesn't necessarily mean you have one. And third, and what I see very commonly in the inpatient setting, is documented tolerance of penicillin. I frequently see, you know, someone reports a penicillin allergy 8 years ago, and then a couple months ago they got a prescription for Augmentin and tolerated it fine. In all of these patients, I would be most comfortable just removing the allergy label outright, as we know these are not true allergic reactions. But what about our more gray area type patients, those with past reactions without IgE features, most commonly the maculopapular rash, unknown reactions, or reactions that happened more than 10 years ago? These patients, I would consider using non-cross-reactive cephalosporins until we have some more details regarding their penicillin allergy. You can definitely consider a penicillin skin test and or an oral challenge in some of these patients to truly delineate is it an actual allergy or not. And always, you can always consider an allergy consult. Our allergists can definitely help weigh in some of these more gray areas with their expertise as well. And then lastly, our most severe category, patients who have past reactions with IgE features such as that anaphylaxis, angioedema, hypotension, and delayed reactions like severe cutaneous adverse reactions, including things like Stevens-Johnson syndrome, toxic epidermal necrolysis, including other things as well like serum sickness, hemolytic anemia, and drug-induced cytopenias. These patients, until I have more details, I'm going to avoid penicillin and cephalosporin agents, especially those early-generation cephalosporins outright. Definitely what I want to consider an allergy consult if we're trying to use a beta-lactam or early-generation cephalosporin in these patients. And if you absolutely need a penicillin, these patients will need desensitization to receive that. So all in all, what are we doing here at Mayo Clinic Hospital in Rochester? We're not immune to reported penicillin allergies being at Mayo Clinic. Recently, back in November of 2019, we developed the Penicillin Allergy Quality Initiative Team, also known as PACIT for short. And this team is an interdisciplinary team of Mayo Clinic healthcare professionals, and their goal is to delabel inappropriate penicillin allergic patients to increase the use of beta-lactams appropriately. As I mentioned, we're not immune. Looking at July 1 of 2019 through January 15th of 2020, 13.4% of Mayo Clinic inpatient patients actually had a documented penicillin allergy. So we fall right within that U.S. population of 10 to 20%, and there's a lot of room we can have to delabel some of these patients. So PACIT unleashed a pilot study that included an algorithm to systematically delabel patients with reported penicillin allergies, involving our nurse colleagues, our pharmacist colleagues, as well as our allergist colleagues. Now, the initial algorithm they developed utilized our nurse colleagues, and they could do one of three things. They could delete the allergy from the chart based on the algorithm, they could switch the allergy to an intolerance and mark it as low severity, or they could provide the patient with a PACIT questionnaire, which is basically a lot of components of that allergy history interview, and inform the floor pharmacist for further evaluation. At which point, the floor pharmacist would come by, and they could delete the allergy or switch to an intolerance. They could use previously tolerated cephalosporins or third or higher generation cephalosporins, and then they could also consider an allergy consult for further review. This pilot study was rolled out in two floors here at Mayo Clinic, and so far it's had really great preliminary results and that I'm really excited about. They initially identified 40 eligible patients in this pilot study, of which 23 had interventions complete. Of those 23, 8 were delabeled after the nurse's review right away, leaving 15 for the pharmacist to review. Of the 15, the pharmacist was able to review 13 of them, and they delabeled or used the cephalosporin in 8 of them after that RPH review. They also considered that 10 of those patients would be eligible for allergy evaluation and follow-up after this process. Overall, this is really exciting data and exciting to see that Mayo Clinic is taking an active role at trying to delabel mislabeled penicillin-reported patients. Recently, PDSA Cycle 3 in this project started in January 15th of 2020. However, it's unfortunately been put slightly on halt given the ongoing COVID pandemic. But I'm excited to see it kind of ramp back up again and expand to more floors. So in summary, today we discussed that penicillin allergies are widely overreported by the general population. Not only that, they can have significant clinical and financial impacts associated with them. We can follow a penicillin delabeling protocol to significantly reduce our burden of penicillin allergies. I think it's important to remember that no matter what role you serve in the healthcare team, you can play an active role in allergy stewardship in asking that question and investigating further with your patient to see if they truly have a penicillin allergy so we can optimize their patient care and outcomes.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, subscribe using iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Thank you for listening to Mayo Clinic Pharmacy Grand Rounds. Join us weekly for more exciting clinical pharmacology topics.